Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Thursday, June 22nd. I am Matt Harmon coming to you from the condo cast here in Virginia Beach. Hopefully, fingers crossed, for the very final time in this condo. I can't look at these green walls anymore. I can't sit in this folding chair anymore. I'm sure my lower back as an aged, soon to be 32-year-old is completely toast, completely dusted. Tell you what, we're not talking about dust or toast or teams that are going to be disappointing or players that are going to be disappointing. This is a mega, mega positive episode here today as we continue our Flip the Script series. We got a really awesome topic to dig into today, and we've got a really awesome fella here to co-pilot this thing with me. It's Andy Behrens. What's going on, buddy?
Man, I feel like the whole condo era of this podcast has been really solid. This series has been good. I mean, the condo generally has been a real, I don't know, it's been a real net benefit here.
You can say that, and it's one of those things that you know, look, I'm not going to get too deep into this, like Virginia Beach, Sandbridge geography, but it's Sandbridge is kind of like an island. So there's only one way in, one way out, and we are on the very farthest end. It's not literally an island. Mm. It's like land mass wise. I'm really not sure what to call it, but we're on the farthest end of it. So basically anytime we need to leave this condo to go anywhere, it's like, oh, you're tacking 20 minutes onto your trip there, yeah. Especially when most people here that are here are actually on vacation. I'm not, which like kind of ruins the vibe a little bit, because I've got people like day drinking out at the pool, and I'm, you know, no offense, Andy, doing this podcast with you, which I love doing this podcast with you, but like day drinking by the pool, doing the podcast with Andy, you know, it's hard to say which one is more important. So most of these people are driving slow. They're, you know, it can be tough. I'm ready to just be in the house that we bought, you know what I'm saying? So I'm ready for the condo cast to be over.
But hard when you're in a spot like working and literally everybody else there, 95% of the remaining population there is actively on vacation and like aggressively on vacation. That is hard.
Aggressively on vacation. We're actually on top of the like Mexican restaurant down here. Like I could jump and like maybe hurt myself, but not really sustain any major injuries. I would definitely survive. I could jump and be like drinking a margarita in 5 seconds, you know, like that's quite literally possible. But nobody's here to feel bad for me about any of that. They're here to get some takes. And like I said, we've got a great installment here of our summer Flip the Script series. You know what we've been doing here if you've been following along with the podcast. If you haven't been, go back and listen to all the episodes. They're basically evergreen. I pretty much stand by everything I've said on these last few episodes here. But in the month of June, we've been going back and looking at the biggest surprises from last season, trying to predict who will be the biggest surprises of this season. Like I said, we had a negative one last week or last episode. You know, who's going to be this year's Rams? I don't want to think about that stuff. I don't want to think about teams crashing down. This podcast is much more enjoyable. We're trying to identify who is going to be this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown. And Andy, really what we mean by that is who is going to be the dark horse top 10 receiver this year. I put the parameter on it, Andy, of just they have right now have to be ranked outside the top 20 consensus wide receivers on Fantasy Pros. Amon-Ra St. Brown was wide receiver 28 at the beginning of August 2022. I went back to look at it because shout out to me. I wrote an article about the 10 receivers I was higher than consensus on. Amon-Ra St. Brown was one of them. So don't look at the other name. Don't look at some of the other names on the list. Like, don't look at Allen Robinson on that list. Okay. I just want you to focus on Amon-Ra St. Brown. But anyways, before we get into some of the candidates here, Andy, Amon-Ra St. Brown, where did people go wrong not seeing the ceiling that Amon-Ra St. Brown possessed?
So first of all, the parameters of this conversation, I get where we're going here with the guys who fall outside sort of the you know, they're into the wide receiver two range, deep into the wide receiver two range. Separately, we could have had a super interesting conversation about like just second year guys who are poised to to now, you know, find themselves as perhaps top 10 receivers. But we kind of set the cutoff at a place that excludes Olave, that excludes Garrett Wilson, who I think there's just so much optimism built in. And maybe in those cases, it's like an overcorrection to having missed to an extent on Amon-Ra St. Brown, right? I mean, he had fully broken out at the end of his rookie season. And it was just a question of whether you thought the sort of consistent and extreme volume was going to still be there for him at the beginning of 2022. Because those, I mean, anybody who was playing fantasy football in 2021 at the end in the money weeks, I mean, you know that Amon-Ra St. Brown just never missed, right? It was six straight weeks of double digit targets, at least eight catches, at least 70 yards, almost always had a touchdown. They were using him in fun ways, right? It wasn't like strictly short range stuff from the slot. We'd see him in the backfield. We'd see him out wide. Like it was great. You know, the skepticism, like looking back, I can't even really get in touch with the skepticism about him coming into last year, because like he hit the ground running, right? Like he was great. Yeah. Immediately, basically every week that we saw fully healthy and operational Amon-Ra St. Brown, he was absolutely fantastic. Goff was good. The Lions were fun. Everything about it was a good story. We should have simply trusted. I mean, that's too long a stretch, and he became too essential to the offense to really think that they would go into the following season and he would just be a bit player, as if there were, you know, as if there were somebody that was really going to sponge all that work away. Maybe it was optimism about DeAndre Swift that should not have been there. I really don't know. Like I can't get in touch with whatever it is that prompted us to like 28 wide receiver 28. Is that right? That seems crazy. That seems absolutely crazy. Given the way that guy finished in, you know, as a rookie, like not looking like a rookie at all.
And there were times where he was like sub, like outside the top 30 receivers, like going drafted and stuff like that. I remember that being like a thing during the summer best ball time. And he really never creeped up. I think maybe like towards the end of the summer, he, you know, in real draft time, he was like 24-ish. But again, he never really got inside the top 20. And yeah, I set the top 20. For one, we definitely should do like a full episode on the second year wide receivers. These guys coming in, because it's like it's an awesome class. But yeah, I mean, basically, like you said, people have bought into Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. They're right now ranked 10th and 13th in consensus rankings. Like people are in on those guys already making that leap. Yeah, we should absolutely do the episode just on this, the second year class in general, because it's always very profitable. But by the way, Andy, I said top 24 receivers. I put it at top 20 just to include one second year wide receiver that we will get to here, who I like as this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown. But yeah, again, I think what people missed was the circumstances that caused him to produce were so often talked about when talking about that end of 2021 stretch. Like nobody else was there. Look who else was around him. That's the reason he got, you know, 33 or something, like some crazy target share, which I continue to make the point. I know others did that. Hey, you're not up like his draft slot there at wide receiver 24 to 30. Nobody's asking you to believe he's going to get that type of target share. He kind of did get that type of target share. He was at 28.1%, 25.7% of the air yards. Like he ended up getting more. And that's, I think, part of this too, is that it's a fun, like it has to be really like a fundamental misunderstanding of the player's ability, I think, has to go into this discussion too. Like,
yeah.
We are missing the boat on how good this guy is. And, you know, I mean, I'll even bucket myself into that, because I loved Amon-Ra St. Brown, the player. I continue to love Amon-Ra St. Brown, the player. But clearly, like he ended up being a top 10 receiver. I wasn't projecting that. There was even more to get out of his skill set. So I think these guys that are like high end targeted players, even for a stretch like that, there's a reason they get those targets. You know, like targets don't just happen to a player. Even if he was really like just a mid type player, like people thought, he'd be getting, you know, Josh Reynolds and all those other dudes that were on the roster at that point would still be getting a ton of volume. And I know they ended up trading TJ Hockenson and DeAndre Swift got hurt and stuff like that. But I'm gonna tell you what, going into this year, there's still not a lot of dudes there in Detroit. So St. Brown's going to be a fascinating player to talk about. But yeah, I think you're right that it really is just a misunderstanding of who the player was and the circumstance of why he produced those numbers to end his rookie season.
Yeah, pretty healthy dose of just Lions skepticism there in general, I would imagine, because we're certainly overcorrecting, maybe not overcorrecting, but we're certainly not making the same mistake with Wilson and Olave, both of whom, you know, had terrific opportunities last year. Sketchy quarterback situations are in much better spots right now.
Yeah. So again, I set the parameters here. They got to be outside the top 20 receivers. A couple names that like I think have top 10 ceiling that just slightly missed that cutoff, like DJ Moore, your guy in Chicago. I think he, if clicks with Justin Fields, he could be that guy, but he's wide receiver 19. You know, Deebo Samuel's wide receiver 18. I don't know that he has that top 10 ceiling again, but he certainly has done it before. Terry McLaurin is right at wide receiver 20. I really don't want to put myself out on the Terry McLaurin island. I mean, I'm ready to do it, but if like you can stop me from doing it, it's probably good. I think that wide receiver core is kind of just too good. I think it's kind of too good for McLaurin to have that type of season with Sam Howell. So I'm saving myself from myself by saying they have to be outside 20 so that we don't have to talk about Terry McLaurin, but you know, get a couple beers in me and I'm ready to do it.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? Well, so recognized as the governor of Terry McLaurin Island. I'm sorry. Like there are other residents, but you are, you know, you're the chief magistrate. You're like, you're in charge.
I'll happily take that title. Okay. I'm ready to take that title as the Terry McLaurin guy, but like, I'm also kind of the Curtis Samuel guy. And I'm also kind of the Jahan, like I'm trying to become the Jahan Dotson guy too. So like, listen, if Tom Brady, Tom Brady was the damn quarterback here, I'd be ready to do it. But like, Sam Howell's going to kind of need to throw the ball 170 times, I think, to Terry McLaurin for him to have a top 10 ceiling.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, as good as Terry McLaurin is, these other guys are too good for that to happen. So saving myself from myself there. Like you said, this also excludes some of the second year receivers like Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave because the optimism is built in. Devonta Smith, like we can't include him because he's wide receiver 14. So a lot of good players aren't going to fit into this mix. But we're going to start this discussion. One of the candidates that I have here, we actually kind of two candidates, and I'm cheating a little bit by nominating both of them here, but I think they both deserve consideration. They both play for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Wide receiver 21, Calvin Ridley, I think he clearly has a top 10 ceiling because he is really, 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 really good at football. Last time we saw him play, which was admittedly a while ago, Trevor Lawrence is really good. But I also think Christian Kirk down at wide receiver 31 also kind of makes sense for this because we've already seen what happens when people fundamentally misunderstand how good of a player Christian Kirk is. It just happened last year, by the way. Shout out to me. Again, don't talk about Allen Robinson, but shout out to me. Christian Kirk was in that also 10. I'm higher than consensus on last year. So again, Christian Kirk, good player. I think there's a non-0% chance, maybe even like a 50-50% chance Kirk is just better than Ridley in fantasy this year. Not in real life, but in fantasy this year, Andy. So I think both of them make sense for this discussion.
Yeah, I think certainly the gap between Ridley and Kirk is too wide, especially after like Kirk just proved everything that you'd want him to prove like in order to be a wide receiver two on your fantasy team, right? Like we just saw it all. It was a wonderful season. Ridley is a, given the parameters here, he's an obvious candidate for this because, I mean, he's literally done it before, right? He's been in the wide receiver one ranks before, happened as recently as 2020. He's clearly tied to an ascending quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, a guy who, I don't know, like if you told me right now that Trevor Lawrence was going to go 4,500 yards and 30 touchdowns this year, Yeah. That seems, I mean, he just gave us 4,025, right? So that seems entirely possible. I guess my hesitancy here, like if we're allowed to say that one of these guys is going to be that Amon-Ra St. Brown who finishes as a wide receiver one, I could get on board with that. It's just this team has like multiple talented, trusted receivers who have to be fed, right? Like, and if you told me that this team was going to end up with like three guys who had 105 targets or thereabouts, you know, between 100 and 110, like that would make a lot of sense to me too, and it would probably prevent any one of them from finishing as a top 10 guy.
I'm sort of on the same page with you there. I really wanted to include, because like when I first started making this list, I immediately put Calvin Ridley as one of the first options, but then also thought to myself, like, I really still like Christian Kirk. Like I said, I think there's like a 50-50 chance that Christian Kirk is just better in fantasy this year. And by the way, Christian Kirk could be better in fantasy this year, and Calvin Ridley can still beat his ADP at like wide receiver 21. Like I said, that is certainly possible. He can beat that ranking. Kirk would just really beat that ranking in that scenario. You know, when we talked about the who's going to be this year's Eagles, like Scott and I believe that was Scott on that episode. I talked about we ended up naming the Jaguars as the candidates. And I actually think that their target distribution could very much look Eagles-esque, right, Andy? Like,
yeah,
145 yeah. targets for AJ Brown, that can be Calvin Ridley. You know, 136 targets for Devonta Smith, that can be Christian Kirk. Dallas Goedert, 69. Obviously, he got banged up there, but like that can be the Evan Ingram role. And then like, you know, 51-ish targets for Zay Jones, maybe a little more, because I think the Jags are going to throw the ball more than the Eagles did last year. Like, that's all perfectly plausible. You know, Kenny Gainwell, 29 targets. Miles Sanders, 26 targets. Like, those can be the Travis Etienne targets somewhere in there. So
I also feel like the rule of Zay Jones is that he's always going to finish with like 25 more targets than you think he should or could yep. have, right?
Yep. So, if I'm saying 51, it's somewhere in the 70s.
Yeah.
If I'm saying 51, somewhere in the 70s, 100%. I agree with you there. But I do think that ends up, I think that ends up disqualifying these guys from being one of our three finalists for this, who's going to be this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown. But
yeah,
again, I really wanted to talk about them just because I think Kirk is a screaming value right now. And obviously, look, if Ridley is a top 10 receiver this year, I'm not going to be surprised because he's just so, so good.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. Again, we're going to talk about a couple of other guys who've actually done this before, who've actually hit that wide receiver one range before. So no surprise at all if Ridley does it.
Okay. Let's move on to our next one here. And like I said, I originally wanted to do wide receiver 24 as the cutoff for this. I moved it up to wide receiver 20 to talk about Calvin Ridley, but mostly because I wanted to talk about Drake London, who, it depends on where you look. I'm looking at a half PPR expert consensus. He's wide receiver 24. I actually think it might've been 23 yesterday, flip flopped with the guy that who's currently 23, who we'll talk about in a second. But Drake London, man, Andy, I feel like people have heard me talk about the Falcons a lot on the show. I feel like people have, understood why I'm not buying the skepticism as much on the Falcons as other people are. So I will ask you, where do you stand with Drake London?
This is a great player who fits the profile perfectly. Like, if we want to take a more literal, like, who's going to be the Amon-Ra St. Brown, from last year, you know, second year player, huge talent. Shoot, they were on the same, like literally on the same team in college, right? Both members of the same receiving corps at USC. Plus London it wasn't a big finish in the same way that Amon-Ra St. Brown had the big finish as a rookie, but his last five games, London's last five games, 48 targets, at least 70 receiving yards in four of those games. Perhaps not quite as dynamic a passing offense. That, like, Desmond Ridder is the one factor that is maybe suppressing him here. But I mean, we like everything about London's profile. He's huge. He's 6'5", right? Huge collegiate talent, contested catch winner. Should be a red zone magnet. Like, profiles is the sort of guy that you can imagine catching, you know, 10 to 12 touchdowns for years to come. Looks like a star, like just has the look of a star. The issue is Atlanta, you know, they only passed the ball 415 times last year. That's got to trend a different direction. Ridder has to be something better than, like, you know, one of the five worst quarterbacks who start in the NFL. I think he can be. He's still a young developing player, but if those things come to pass, you know, and but this was also part of the Amon-Ra St. Brown discussion was general skepticism about the team. And then, you know, it didn't matter. Like, number one, the offense ended up great. I don't know that Atlanta ends up like the Lions of 2022, but this is a hyper talented player who demands targets, I think. And if he had found his way to a different, original rookie or landing spot, we would think differently of him. A fair amount of optimism built in, but I love the name here. He's going to be one of my finalists. I think he's a really strong candidate.
Yeah. I think he's got to be a finalist to me. You know, offensive DVOA, the Falcons were 13th last year. They were already like a pretty efficient offense. And I think that they can take another step if Desmond Ridder is better than Marcus Mariota. And I've said on the podcast 1,000 times, I think Ridder, even if he's not a great player, he's going to be functional. He's going to be better than Marcus Mariota. And that comes back to another perfect tie into the St. Brown example that I can't tell you how many times last year, you know, with St. Brown's, like, well, his quarterback is Jared Goff. It's like, okay, I get it. Jared Goff was unceremoniously dumped hard by the Rams. But like, this was a guy in, look, this doesn't make perfect sense with Ritter because he's a second year player that we don't have a wide resume on. But with Goff, like, we had a ton, like a full resume of him feeding Cooper Kupp good seasons, feeding Robert Woods good seasons, feeding Brandon Cooks a good year there. So like, Jared Goff can be like an average starting quarterback in the NFL, maybe slightly above average starting quarterback in the NFL. And like, I think Ritter can be somewhere in that Ryan Tannehill functional zone. And that's really all we're asking for with Drake London. Cause I do believe there's going to be an uptick in the passing game for him. And yeah, he checks those two boxes. Does Drake London. I think people are misunderstanding the situation here. The Falcons are not going to be one of the most run heavy teams in the NFL. Even if Kyle Pitts, the discourse around Kyle Pitts is so exhausting at this point. Like, Pitts, I think, is going to be a good player. He already was a good player in his rookie year. I love this idea that, like, oh, if Pitts can just be who we thought he was, he had 1,000 yards as a rookie. Like, give me a freaking break. He's a good player, even if it was a fantasy disappointment last year. Then it's like Bijan Robinson. And then we're talking about like Mac Hollins and Scotty Miller and nobody at the target tree behind that. Like, there's a concentrated target tree here for Drake London to hit. And he is just so good, man. He is. I think he's in the same tier as Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave because he's that kind of he's a big time separator and a really good contested catch player. So I said I wasn't going to say too much, and I said a lot about the Falcons here, Andy. But
as long as they're passing the ball like, you know, 28, 30, 32 times a game, that's enough, because this is going to be the usage here just seems like it's just going to be so narrow. It's going to be Pitts. It's going to be London. It's going to be Bijan, and they're going to feed the guys that, you know, they're trying to build this offense around. And it's, you know, it's got a little bit of that sort of vintage Vikings quality in that way, right? Where we know where the ball is going to go, or at least we think we know where the ball is going to go. Also, another thing you said, a thing that we should have noted about Goff and St. Brown is that, like, all of Jared Goff's tendencies as a quarterback, we should have looked at that and said, man, this just suits Amon-Ra St. Brown perfectly. Like, Jared Goff wants to throw where Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to 100%. Make a living, right? Like, it's again, it's crazy that he was wide receiver 28.
Desmond Ridder, 28.8 pass attempts per game in his starts last year. Matt Ryan with the Falcons. People conveniently forget we have a full year of data on the Arthur Smith offense in Atlanta prior to Marcus Mariota. 33 pass attempts. Ryan Tannehill, 30.1 pass attempts in 2020, 27 in his 10 starts in 2019. So yeah, I think we can safely get to that type of passing volume, Andy. So all right, let's move on to our next guy. We both agree Drake London has to be one of the three finalists. I'll nominate Chris Godwin here. He does not fit into the second year receiver. Like, this is a guy we've seen before. But by the way, this is a guy we've seen have a huge ceiling before. Like, he's been a top level fantasy receiver in a couple of seasons. He even did it once in the Jameis Winston carnival attack with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And look, Andy, you and I disagreed on Baker Mayfield. You know, you think he's this year's Geno Smith. I personally do not believe that, but
he is the people's this year's Geno Smith.
All right, you and the people have fun with Baker Mayfield, but look, Chris Godwin is a really good player, and I think he's going to be better this year than he was last year because he's going to be a full year removed from the ACL tear. So, I guess we also have to talk about Mike Evans, who's wide receiver 32 for Mike Evans. Should be a concentrated target tree between those two guys and Russell Gage there in Tampa Bay. But I mean, you should be in on this because you're in on the whole Baker Mayfield revival show, Andy.
I am definitely in on this. You know, Godwin, like, he just caught 100 plus balls for over 1,000 yards while coming off a significant injury. So, as you said, just simply that, you know, being another year removed from injury is going to help. He's going to be paired with the real this year's Geno Smith. I'm not gonna try to tell you that Baker Mayfield's gonna be an upgrade at quarterback from the actual greatest quarterback of all time, but the nice thing here is it should be a concentrated tree. That is pretty wild that Mike Evans is like some of this is just the pitfalls of ranking the entire wide receiver field like at a time when everyone's healthy, right? Like, there's just gonna be some stuff that looks weird, and Mike Evans in the 30s looks weird. Literally never failed to reach 1,000 yards, right? Like, It's not going to happen. If Mike Evans plays 15 games, he's going to finish comfortably inside the top 30 wide receivers. I see no way that that doesn't happen. Godwin is another guy like, Ridley, who we've already discussed, who's done this before. He's been a wide receiver one in fantasy before. So that to me gets him I'm waving him into the finalist room. He's done it. Nobody should be surprised if Chris Godwin finishes as like the wide receiver 10, the wide receiver 9, something like that.
I honestly forgot that Chris Godwin had 1,000 yards last year. Like, I thought if you could, he only had 3 touchdowns, by the way. Like, that's part of what's going on here. But it was his first 100 catch season. It was the most targets he's ever had. And he did it in 15 games too. Like, the thing I knew is that he only played 15 games. And I don't think I think there was a couple he like didn't finish. So if you had told me 100 catches, I probably would have put it at like 950 yards, you know, one of those type of seasons. And he was under 10 yards per catch. Again, I think he just wasn't himself. When he's at his peak, dude, this guy's like a really good player. And by the way, from an archetype standpoint, he does fit the big slot, power slot mold. He was doing it before Amon-Ra St. Brown was in the league. He was that type of guy. And if you just think about the receivers that Baker Mayfield, and part of my problem with Baker Mayfield, Andy, is that he just like takes true traditional number one receivers and just drags them into the mud. Odell Beckham, you know, DJ Moore, like these true number one X receiver types. Because
by God, you give him a Jarvis Landry.
Right. And Chris Godwin is like the 5X version. And Jarvis Landry is a good player, but like 5X version of Jarvis Landry. He's like the souped up Jarvis Landry. So I guess that kind of makes sense why people are out on Mike Evans, because he's that prototypical X receiver who's also coming off a down year and doesn't have the ACL excuse and is kind of towards the danger zone for wide receivers in terms of age. The big receiver archetype can be a little troubling. So for that reason, I totally get why people are in on Chris Godwin. And I'm with you that I think we wave him in the finalists because I love the player. I mean, I really, really don't want to get in. I can't believe you're doing this here with like Baker Mayfield again, Andy. That irritates me. But I'm good for now. We have a lot of other candidates I like. I'm good for now penciling him in as a finalist with the right to remove him later if you sell me on someone else. But I like Chris Godwin here. We can move him on. Next player I like, and I really, really like this player, is Michael Pittman. First of all, I'll make the case for Michael Pittman because I am probably, like, if I'm the governor of Terry McLaurin Island, I've also got another in a chain of islands. I usually call it the reception perception penthouse. Like, and I've got plenty of dudes with different wings in there. I mean, my God, what am I talking about here? But like, I'll actually, you know what? I'm officially changing it to the like circuit of islands from now on. So the penthouse is over with. We've graduated. The business is doing well. We're going to buy a set of islands instead. If Terry McLaurin has his own island, like, I think Michael Pittman's fighting to have his own island here too, because this guy's a good football player. He is another USC receiver. So let's just really get USC here really well represented. Michael Pittman, I think, is probably one of the most underrated receivers in the NFL period, Andy. Like, we talk about him as a good player. I think he is a legit alpha. You look at his reception perception profile, has been great the last 2 years. 79th percentile success rate versus man, 95th against press, 82nd against zone. Like, he can run every route. He's not the biggest deep threat, but my God, like those over the middle old Keenan Allen routes, he can really run those extremely well. I love him as a player. This is a guy who got a ton of volume last year, almost caught 100 passes. You know, Michael Pittman had a good bit of volume there, 25.2% of the targets, 26.5% of the air yards. Tell me why he doesn't do that or more. Again, I think the biggest hangup here, Andy, is that typically we don't see rookie quarterbacks be the guys to like unlock receivers, especially a guy who fits in the Anthony Richardson archetype. That's my hesitation here. But I can see a top 10 season for Michael Pittman because he's that good. He should get that opportunity. I think there is a fundamental misunderstanding of both the Colts offense and certainly him as a player. I'm just a little stuck on the rookie quarterback part of it, even if I like Anthony Richardson.
I am pretty confident that Pittman is going to have a top 10 receiver season in his career. I don't know that it's going to be in the season ahead. By the way, the singular stat that every time I look at it, I have to like do a triple take and verify and re-verify is that Michael Pittman caught 99 balls last year. Like, that's wild to me. Like, within the context of that offense, that is heroic work. And they weren't all memorable, but man, 99 balls for the 2022 Indianapolis Colts is really something.
Some of them I'd really like to forget, Andy. I watched almost all of them. I'd like to forget a lot of them. And he had that season, by the way, like almost 100 catches and 925 yards. I could just talk about that. I thought Chris Godwin had.
Yeah, well, that's like, I mean, those are numbers that you like those are running back numbers, right? Like, that's not what you expect of a like an alpha receiver who's catching 99 balls. Less than 1,000 yards is really something. The issue in 2023, obviously, as you say, is that we're reinventing the offense around I don't mean to slight Anthony Richardson by calling him like a developmental quarterback, but there's there's work to do here, right? Like, he completed less than 54% of his throws at Florida last year. There is clearly work to do. Is the volume going to be the same? If the ADOT is the same, that's not super exciting, right? He was not really a downfield guy almost at all last year. There's not a ton else here. There are some interesting pieces around him, but nobody who's really. It's not the Calvin Ridley, Christian Kirk situation where there's somebody that you would really expect to draw targets away from him. I think Pittman is clearly the number one. It's pretty wild that we're talking about yet another member of like the 2019 USC Trojans. So from that perspective, like, by the way, one other professional receiver, second year receiver, also on that team. Trivia time. Can you name him?
That current team, not the Colts, right? You talking about these USC teams?
I'm talking about USC in 2019. That's right. It's Velus Jones. Snubbed in this conversation.
Can't believe I forgot him.
We're not going to be talking about Velus Jones here. Yeah, he was, I believe he was a Trojan that year as well. Anyway, wow. I'm sorry for that diversion.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, so happy to have it.
I think Pittman is somebody that it's going to happen for him, and we're going to we paid kind of an expected price for Pittman last year too. Like, I was really excited about him. I am excited about him long term. He's one of those guys that he's like a centerpiece player on a couple of dynasty rosters of mine. I don't think this is happening in 2023. I would love to be wrong about that though.
Yeah. I really wanted you to talk me out of this because I just love the player so much. And like, I will take the under on 141 targets that he got last year, but I will take the clear over on the ADOT, the 9.3, you know, yards per catch there, like the yards per target, 6.6, like his first 2 years, 8.2, 8.4 yards per target. Like, that's more of the player that Michael Pittman is. Okay. Like, the thing that irritates me is that, you know, Carson Wentz was totally good at exploiting Michael Pittman as like a downfield contested catch receiver in 21. And I was like, all right, let's just get like somebody to get him on these like slashing over the middle routes that I was talking about. And that's like all Matt Ryan did, and even less than I expected. So like, can we get Anthony Richardson to meet Michael Pittman in the middle? I think it's possible. I don't think it's going to happen, especially early in his rookie season. And for that reason, I do think it's okay. I want Michael Pittman to know I fought for him here. If I fought for him here, but Andy talked me out of it and is the one convincing me he is not going to be this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown. But I'm pretty comfortably going to be ahead of consensus, I think, on Pittman, because I think he's a really good player.
And that's, that's how we should rank. We should try to isolate the talent of these players and separate them to some, because I feel like the biggest mistakes that I make as a fantasy analyst are when I decide ahead of a season that I know what an offense is going to look like. Of course, we don't know exactly what the Colts offense is going to look like and make assumptions there. It is generally safer to just simply bank on the talent of a player that you believe in.
That is a beautiful transition to our next player, Andy, because that was an offense that this player played in an offense that was absolutely, you know, people thought they knew what it was going to be. And him and his teammate, DK Metcalf, became two of the biggest values in fantasy drafts last year, especially Tyler Lockett, who I have to, again, maybe this is a courtesy nomination, but Tyler Lockett is wide receiver 27. Are you people out of your freaking mind. Wide receiver 27 for Tyler Lockett. The reason that this is irritating is because DK Metcalf is ranked at 15. Okay. Do people realize that Tyler Lockett was wide receiver 13 last year and DK Metcalf was wide receiver 18 last year? There has been, if Lockett's not ahead of DK Metcalf, the gap has been extremely narrow the last few, like been very minimal the last few years. What are we doing here? Like, I think the problem in terms of him being this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown is just simply that there's Metcalf is there, Jaxon Smith-Njigba is there. But I, again, maybe this is another courtesy nomination. I mean, Tyler Lockett definitely has his own private island in the string of reception perception islands there. So again, I've just got a bunch of my dudes on this list. What a surprise. But hey, I gotta at least say, like, the Lockett thing is ridiculous. He can have a top 10 season because we've seen him do it before, and it's just ridiculous that he's at 27.
Yeah, this is Matt Harmon playing the hits, right? Like, you don't need to confirm or reconfirm your Tyler Lockett credentials. They are very well established. I will say, I think that, you know, I would assume that the gap between Metcalf and Lockett is that I've certainly got this in my head, an idea that at some point DK Metcalf is going to give us like 1400 yards and 14 touchdowns, and there's just going to be a supernova season from him. And I'm one of those people, like, I had a fair amount of Tyler Lockett last year, but I'm definitely one of those people that consistently has Metcalf ahead, just on the possibility that, you know, all the physical traits here, the usage, there's an opportunity out there somewhere for Metcalf to just have a, you know, league winning type season. Tyler Lockett is so consistently like a fringy wide receiver one, low end wide receiver two, that it's wild that we also consistently rank him, you know, at the very back end of the wide receiver twos, and that people were ducking him so much last year. Like, I mean, he's just been so consistently good, metronomically good for a long period of time. As you say, he's another one of those guys who's already done this. We're not asking him to do something that he's not done before. Like, he lives sort of in the fringy wide receiver one, wide receiver two range. So wouldn't be a surprise at all for him to finish at like wide receiver 10 this year. He's probably done it. I don't have his annual finishes in front of me, but they're like, the guy is so consistently top 12-ish that, again, and plus, you know, four straight seasons with 1,000 yards and 70 catches. I want to say five straight seasons with at least 8 touchdowns, right? He's much more of a, you know, scoring threat, downfield threat than we necessarily would have thought years ago. You know, that you might not have thought that was his original profile, but he's just a do it all receiver. So it feels like he's aged out of an Amon-Ra St. Brown comparison, right? He doesn't feel yeah, like the right guy for this, but based on the parameters that you've said, I can't really argue with it. I mean, he's probably the most likely guy on this list to actually finish as a, I guess Godwin I would put in that conversation as well, but he might be the most likely person on this list to finish as a top 10 receiver. Actually,
in 2020, Tyler Lockett was wide receiver 9, by the way, DK Metcalf wide receiver 7, a pretty narrow gap there. In 2021, he was wide receiver 13, Metcalf again wide receiver 12, like that narrow gap there. But listen, I love DK Metcalf. I fought for the winning side in the DK Metcalf wars for many, many years. Like, when this guy can't separate, he can't run routes, he can't turn. Like, give me a break. I don't know what people are watching. He's a good player. He's always been a really, really good player. So Metcalf, I agree with you, could have a supernova season. It's just like, the tough thing to square there is the 12 gap, the 12 player gap in their rankings of 15 and 27. So listen, did I think Tyler Lockett was going to win this award? No. Did I want to, you know, push for him in the primary? Like, did I think he could win the White House? No. You know, is he going to appeal to General Electric? Clearly not. But I wanted to stump for him here in the primaries nonetheless. So, I'm fine, Andy, if you don't want to include him in the finalists. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, he just feels he feels like the wrong guy if we're making an Amon-Ra St. Brown comparison. Yeah. And if we're using your parameters, he should be a finalist. It just feels like he's too well established for this.
Yeah, probably one of the better bets to outkick their ADP, but probably not the guy for this list. Okay, next one here, my last one before you give me a wild card and we kind of just throw it randomly. Deontay Johnson, and I wrote slash, I guess, George Pickens, because I don't want the George Pickens bros to come after me. Okay. Andy, people hate me when I say like George Pickens could be Devontae Parker. Like, oh my God, how could you dare? I want people to go back and like read what people used to say about Devontae Parker. Okay. Like, I think I think he could probably be better than Devontae Parker, but they're thinking like New England Patriots, Devontae Parker. Okay. People hate me for that. People do not like my, and by the way, I like George Pickens has good notes in his reception perception profile. He just has some bad ones too, that I think could hinder his ceiling. Even if he's, you know, an incredibly talented player who makes incredible catches. But Deontay Johnson, I think, does make sense for like a guy not totally in the Amon-Ra St. Brown mold. Obviously, he's not a second year player, but he is a young guy. And I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding about who he is as a player. People think like he seems to just fall ass backward into all this volume all the time. He does fall his ass backwards during some yards after catch situations that he shouldn't do. But there's a reason he gets a boatload of targets. He's one of the best route runners in the NFL. Yeah. He's always open. And I do think the Steelers offense can take a step. I think Kenny Pickett can take a step. And, you know, Deontay Johnson's not going to score zero touchdowns this year. Like, he's probably going to score 7 to 8 and get, you know, 130, 140 targets again. I mean, that would 130 would be like conservative for him. So I don't know. I think by the way, he's done this before, you know, from a top 10 season. I believe he's had one definitely in PPR, maybe in half PPR. I'll go back and look here in a second. But yeah, I mean, like, we've seen Deontay Johnson be a really, really good player before. I think he has a really, really good season this year as well.
Yeah, I think he was a fringe wide receiver one in just 2021, right? Just a couple of years ago. Massive target total last year, which is the, you know, one of the great arguments for him here. 147 targets. Did like conspicuously little with them, obviously, 882 yards, no touchdowns. I think it's at least worth noting he wasn't like strictly some short range receiver last year, had the highest A dot of his career, almost 11 yards. Pickett, I don't know. I am not a huge Kenny Pickett fan. And I've had people try to tell me that he made massive strides in the second half last year. And I would agree that like he cut down on the turnovers in the second half last year, but like there were just no numbers there. And I don't like, I'm not a huge fan of the offense. I'm not a huge fan of the quarterback. But again, there's an opportunity for significant volume here. I don't, as much as I like George Pickens, and you know, George Pickens is probably responsible for like 5 of my 10 favorite catches last year. George Pickens is not going to get 135 or 140 targets. I don't see that happening. I don't see him becoming somebody who can be the Amon-Ra St. Brown. Deontay hasn't been around quite as long as Tyler Lockett, obviously. So I can't. If Tyler Lockett has aged out of this, Deontay Johnson is probably at the back end of what should be acceptable here. I think this can definitely happen. Again, I'm a little bit more pessimistic on Pickett than most, but this can clearly happen. And I think another thing that people can take away from this podcast and some of the discussion generally is that, and I feel like we've been getting at this with a number of receivers, like targets are earned. It's not just like a role that people fall into, you know. If you're getting 140 targets, you're probably a really good player. You know, that's not just those. That's not accidental in the NFL.
Yeah, again, it's not something you just fall into. Deontay's 26 right now. He'll turn 27 July 5th. So, yeah, he's not like a super super young player. I'm with you that I'm kind of on Kenny Pickett. I do think, wouldn't say major strides. I would say he made strides to end last year. I feel really good about Deontay, the player, and like that he's going to be a big time value. You know, right now he's finally surpassed George Pickens in like summer ADP. And because I agree with you, like you throw the ball to a player of George Pickens. I'm not even just talking about the player George Pickens. I'm talking about the George Pickens archetype, like the non-elite X receiver. It's like throwing 130 targets to Alec Pierce or like 100. Yeah, and Alec Pierce is a pretty good player, but your offense is going to stink if you throw that many targets to a non-elite X receiver. And like, I like George Pickens. I just don't think he's like ever going to be an elite type player. Deontay has elite traits. He has an elite ability to separate across the route tree, not just on the little dink and dunk Ben Roethlisberger stuff. Like, he didn't run a lot of those like short little drag routes last year. It was a lot. I mean, it is a disgusting amount of 9 routes and curl routes in that offense. And that's another thing too. I'm with you that like, I'm on Kenny Pickett. I think I'm like okay with him being like the 18th best starting quarterback in the NFL this year. And I think that would be a pretty good case. I think that's actually probably good enough for him to be the Jared Goff in this scenario for Deontay Johnson. But I do not like Matt Canada, the offensive coordinator. I think they got a little bit better to end last year. They mixed up the route concepts a little bit, but it's still pretty troubling. So do we think he makes sense as the third like guy here, or Andy, do you have a wild card as our last finalist?
You actually really got me with the Goff to Kenny Pickett thing. I can see that. I can definitely see that, because it could very well be that I'm underselling Kenny Pickett. Part of the reason that I'm underselling Kenny Pickett is the wild card that I want to introduce here. And I will admit that it feels entirely wrong to have to throw out a rookie as the potential Amon-Ra St. Brown guy, right?
Okay.
I think if there's one who can sneak into the top 10, top 12, I want to offer up the name Jordan Addison.
Okay.
There's another name I want to talk about that I didn't want to stump for. And he is also a natural fit to be the Amon-Ra St. Brown. So I'll get to him in a second. Addison, however, joining an offense that put the ball in the air well over 600 times last year, right? Like Kirk Cousins finished with 640 some pass attempts last year. The you know, withered husk of Adam Thielen ran the second most routes in the NFL and drew over 100 targets. And he's cooked, right? So we're replacing that guy presumably with Jordan Addison. So we have a path to pretty significant usage here. I also just think that a couple of years ago at Pitt, Addison had an impeccable year. Like, and I know I've mentioned this a few times on the podcast, like when I started doing draft work for, you know, the Kenny Pickett class, I would watch Kenny Pickett stuff and I would just be like, oh my God, Jordan Addison's amazing. And I realized that he didn't follow that up with the same year, but Addison, like for that stretch, with that QB, like he bailed out Kenny Pickett a ton of times on plays that turned out to be like huge field flipping plays. I think Addison at his best is a really wonderful player. I don't think he's exactly like, you know, top 10 real life receiver in the NFL material. I don't mean to oversell him that way. I just think he landed in such a great spot, and it's, you know, to have him paired with Justin Jefferson, and to arrive in this situation where we're not expecting Jordan Addison immediately to be like the alpha receiver for a team, winning everywhere, doing absolutely everything, where he can just sort of slot into a role that's going to have a lot of volume, but also not necessarily going to be, you know, the linchpin of the offense. I think it's a great spot for him. I haven't ranked him as a top 12 fantasy receiver or anything like that, but he's my favorite of the rookies for year one. And you know, if there is a rookie that finishes near that top 12, I think Addison is probably the guy.
I think so too. And, I'm with basically everything you said there, that like, he's probably never going to be a true number one. It's certainly not an elite top 10 type of receiver, but I think he's going to be very good. I hope he's like fully good for training camp, because I know he's had an offseason injury that he's been working through. I don't want him to like start slow, anything like that. That would be a bummer. But you know, Kevin O'Connell said after they drafted him, he's going to get like the easiest looks in the entire NFL. Yeah, 100%. I mean, like there are few true coverage dictators more so than Justin Jefferson, and he's going to fillet those like single coverage looks, because he's a really good route runner against man and zone coverage on these like in breaking routes. He's going to be very good in that spot. So I'm kind of hesitant to say he can be like a top 10 receiver. Like, is Kirk Cousins going to go nuclear this year and have two top 10 receivers and a really good tight end? I mean, oh buddy, Kirk's about to hit free agency again next year, unless they sign him to a contract extension. He's going to make a bajillion dollars if Justin Jefferson's worth like the number one pick in fantasy and Jordan Addison has like a top 10 season. So that kind of has me like raising an eyebrow. Who's the other name that you thought fit perfectly that you aren't totally ready to stump for?
Yeah. So the other name that I think is actually a natural for this discussion, and we should at least introduce it because it's almost a weird omission, is Christian Watson, right? Second year guy who in the second half of his rookie year was outstanding. Obviously we have a QB change there a huge unknown, right? I don't know what it's going to look like with Jordan Love. I don't know if Jordan Love is good necessarily. I know that Watson has physical traits that are pretty rare, even in the NFL. I'm not fully sold on the Packers offense. We have talked before about I don't even know for sure that Watson is the number one. You're bullish on Reed. I'm bullish on Reed. Like, I don't know, but Christian Watson is a, you know, like, just again, in terms of athletic traits, size, what he's already produced in the NFL, he's probably a guy that we should name at least as an honorable mention. And I think it's curious that he didn't even crack the list. And I'm not pounding the table for him or anything like that. He's just probably somebody whose name we should introduce here.
Yeah, his name makes more sense to me than like Treylon Burks, who's another second year receiver that we omitted. Yeah. Although, I mean, you can make the case for Burks. I just have enough questions about the player that I don't want to make the case for Burks. But like, he pops in some like yards per route run stuff, you know, whatever. He does small certain things really well. Just don't think he's like a full enough player that like Amon-Ra St. Brown was. I think Christian Watson's kind of the same way, although I have more optimism about Watson because where he wins is much more valuable than like where Treylon Burks wins. Like, you know, he's a downfield, not a really contested catch guy, but he's freaky, freaky. People thought Burks was like freaky after the catch. Okay, watch him play in the NFL. Give me a break. Christian Watson, though, is like truly freaky after the catch. I think Christian Watson is the number one this year. I think maybe Jaden Reed could be more of like a true number one consistent guy long term, maybe even back half of his rookie year, although I kind of sort of doubt that. But again, I'm leaving myself totally open to the idea that Reed could be better. I think Christian Watson is comfortably better than Romeo Doubs. I think Jaden Reed in time will be comfortably better than Romeo. Such a young group there, Andy. Like Luke Musgrave is going to be the starting tight end without even like breaking a sweat. By the way, I think Luke Musgrave is a huge value at tight end. I'm ready to talk myself into that, but that's a young group, man. I'm with you that like, hey, if we didn't include Christian Watson, I'm okay with, if you want to make him a finalist over Michael Pittman, who I would still stump for, or Deontay Johnson, who I'd still stump for. I'm okay if you think like Christian Watson makes more sense for this, putting him in as a finalist. Or we can go back to the drawing board with some of these other names. We do have to have a third.
He wasn't even my wild card, right? Like, my wild card was Jordan Addison, who I don't necessarily think should be a finalist. I just want to throw it out there. He's my favorite of the rookie class. Just, you know, in terms of parallels between Watson and where Amon-Ra St. Brown was a year ago, I felt like the name made a fair amount of sense. He doesn't make my short list, though.
Okay, let me, before we try to find a third finalist here, I'll throw out just a few more names. By the way, I guess one of these, whoever we include, is not going to win over Drake London and Chris Godwin, so maybe it's like a futile thing, but I'll just throw out a few other names that are outside the top 24 receivers that I think could outkick their ADP. People would make the case for Jerry Jeudy at wide receiver 25. If people have listened to the show, they know I'm not making the case for Jerry Jeudy to be on this list. Mike Williams is an interesting name, but I'm not going to make the case for Mike Williams. I'd love to make the case for Brandon Ayuk, but you heard the conversation with George Kittle. He plays in an offense with George Kittle, Debo Samuel, and Christian McCaffrey. He's not going to have that season unless like circumstances dramatically change. And I think I've made enough case for the guys who have an island in the reception perception chain that you don't need to hear me say the Ayuk thing. Marquise Brown, I think, is like a weird candidate for this list because talk about a guy who could have like 11 targets per game. I think is a really underrated player, not a great player, but an underrated player, but he might be catching passes from like Clayton Tune in week one. Saw that blurb this week. Didn't need to see that. I know others would make the case for Kadarius Toney. I would not make the case for Kadarius Toney. And then I think after that, Kadarius Toney's like wide receiver 39. I think we're kind of in the wilderness there in terms of guys who could, like, other than something crazy happening, could have a top 10 season. So, Andy, does anyone I've just said, anyone previously on the list, make sense of the third finalist, or should we move forward with the third without a third finalist?
Yeah, it's funny. If we just said previously, like, unnamed chief receiver, right? TBD Chiefs receiver, you could talk yourself into it. But when you start looking at the specific names, I can't do it. I'm probably most optimistic on Kadarius Toney, but like actually thinking that Toney is going to give us 15 games at the sort of volume that anyone would need to finish as a top 10 receiver, I don't think that's going to happen. Hollywood is a super interesting name, but it would take such a weird winding path for him to get there. I'm probably most comfortable, if we need a third finalist here, with Deontay, actually.
All right. Hey, listen, No argument from me. We'll put him in the mix here. And that means our three finalists are Drake. By the way, before I take for the finalists, this is a your 100th reminder, people. The wide receiver position is absolutely loaded right now. I'm not saying like, you know, go crazy and draft all receivers in fantasy, anything like that. But like just talking about quality players, we've probably named like 20. This was a we were going to narrow it down to three finalists. And we probably talked about like 15 to 20 players, even if we mentioned them in passing. And just about everybody is really good. Except a couple of them that I'm not gonna really bag on here. But almost all those players we just talked about here is really, really good or will be really, really good in time. So wide receiver, very good position right now. Very hard to rank. Very, very hard to rank the position. All right, so our three finalists, Drake London, Chris Godwin, Deontay Johnson. If you've listened to these episodes before, you know how this goes. Andy's going to rank them 1, 2, 3 in terms of most to least likely be this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown. And then I am going to rank them 1, 2, 3. In terms of most leaks likely to be this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown. And then producer Colin, if needed, is going to break the tie. Andy, we finally had an episode last week where Colin did not have to break the tie. Scott and I were in consensus on who is going to be this year's Rams. Will we be in consensus on who's this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown? Andy, you go first. Rank them 1, 2, 3, most to least likely.
Yeah, I'm gonna count up from number three. Obviously, Deontay is my number three. He barely squeaked into this group. My number two is Chris Godwin. Wouldn't be a huge surprise, surely, if he finishes as a top 10 receiver. Really impressive season last year, coming off the injury. But I mean, my number one for a variety of reasons, mostly because he syncs up, like, in terms of where they have been in their career at the moment that, you know, we're asking for this jump. Like, the Drake London comparison is just perfect, right? The surge at the end of his rookie season, just like Amon-Ra St. Brown, real chance to, you know, an ascending offense, ascending quarterback to some extent. I don't know how good Ritter is going to be. I don't know how much it matters because as you've said, it's such a concentrated usage tree there. I think London's going to see plenty of volume. I'm a huge believer in the player. Maybe a wide receiver one outcome is too much to ask from that offense, but I think he's a huge talent. And this is the sort of player that we should take big swings on. So I'm going to go Drake London number one.
Two episodes in a row. No need to break the tie because I have the exact same order. Number three is Deontay Johnson. Number two is Chris Godwin. And number one for me is Drake London in terms of who's this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown. And it's for the reasons, all of the reasons you said, Andy, and especially that last one, that like in terms of archetype of player you want to bet on, it is Drake London. Like, this is a guy who, you know, he had some drops and some fumbles and some mistakes in his first year. Whoop-de-doo. The real highlights are what matters here. He went out as the Falcons' true X receiver. Like, this wasn't a guy that was moved around the formation. They did some matchup stuff. Arthur Smith is always going to do some of that stuff. But like, he went out at the hardest position to play in the NFL in year one, 72.3% success rate versus man, 72.5% success rate versus press, 81.6% success rate versus zone in reception perception. Like, you want to bet on those numbers right there being a really, really good player. I said the Falcons were this year's Jaguars, right? Like, earlier on here, I think the team, like, and if the team is going to break out like that, somebody's going to have to be the big breakout player. I like Kyle Pitts. I think the hate on Kyle Pitts is, not only has it gone too far, it's just kind of stupid. But I think Drake London is probably the better player long-term. That's just how bullish I am on Drake London. Like, Bijan's really good. He's going to help the efficiency of the offense. Similar to what we said about with Kenny Pickett, Andy, Desmond Ridder could be the 20th best quarterback in the NFL. Yeah. And by the way, like, Drake London's a better talent than Deontay, who I just caped for in this scenario, like, earlier. And I love Deontay, but Drake London's a better talent. Like, Drake London, all he needs is the 20th best quarterback, like, in a Ryan Tannehill type of way, super efficient to break out in this offense. I think you bet on this type of player. And yeah, maybe a wide receiver one season is maybe too much to ask out of Drake London, but Amon-Ra St. Brown had 106 catches, 1,100 yards, and 6 touchdowns last year. Maybe Drake London doesn't catch 100 passes, but like, he could be a 1,200 yard player. He could be an 8 to 9 touchdown player if this offense is really good. You know, and then you're looking at like, okay, Jaylen Waddle, 75 catches, 1,300 yards, 8 touchdowns as wide receiver 7. You know, Devonta Smith had Maybe a more applicable example here in a run heavy offense, but a good player who I actually think Drake London is going to be a better player long term. Wide receiver 9, Amari Cooper, 78 catches, 1,160 yards, 9 touchdowns. Like, I can see Drake London having that stat line this year. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised one bit.
Yeah, the numbers that I sort of casually threw out as a ceiling for DK Metcalf, down the road at some point, like, do I see Drake London having that year, 1,200, 1,300 yards, like 12 touchdowns, 14 touchdowns? I think he's got a year like that in him. I don't know if it's this year, but he, like, that's the sort of ceiling that we like to always bet on. So I'm confident in saying that I'm going to draft a lot of Drake London. That I'll probably draft him ahead of wherever I rank him, because, you know, there's that's a separate discussion that we can have about, like, rankings versus, like, whether you actually draft to the rank or whether you draft to, like, what you think of as the ceiling for a player. I think his ceiling is incredibly high, and so I'm gonna take a bunch of swings at him over time.
The Arthur Smith hate and the Kyle Pitts, like, stink of last year is, I think, gonna keep Drake London, just like the Lions skepticism and the Jared Goff skepticism was enough to keep St. Brown. Like, again, I think his peak was probably 22, 24 in consensus rankings. London is 24 right now. I think that skepticism about how run heavy they're going to be, like, you're going to hear every other fantasy analyst is going to tell you they're going to lead the league in rush attempts after taking a running back eighth overall. Like, I think that in itself, Andy, is going to be the thing that keeps him outside of those top 20 receivers and makes him, like, a big time value. So, like, even I think him being this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown, I think he was probably my betting favorite heading into this show. I'm glad we ended up agreeing on it. Even if he doesn't become that player, though, I think the message from both of us is clear, Andy. Draft Drake London in 2023 here and beyond, by the way.
Yeah, 100%, fully on board.
All right, buddy. Appreciate you doing this with me. You might be joining us next week for the last Flip the Script series episode. But in the meantime, what else do you have working on besides penning the Valus Jones, Equanimee St. Brown breakout pieces?
Oh, every other day, I tell you, every other day, I give you a list of 6 guys that you should be adding in fantasy baseball leagues. I realize you can't add all 6. I don't know who you're dropping to add like 6 guys a day, but that's what I do. That's my lot in life right now.
Hey, well, better you than me. So I'm glad you're doing it. Somebody's got to do it to keep the lights on here at Yahoo Fantasy in the football offseason. In the meantime, that's going to do it for this show. Like I said, next week is our final week of the Flip the Script series before I made an executive decision that we're taking the entire July 4th holiday off. It's like, I'm taking the whole week off. So let's just shut the podcast down. Nobody cares. Okay.
It's a great call.
Yeah. Out doing fun things. I'm not taking the whole week off just to be like, hey, Andy, Scott, Dalton, two of you guys, you better host the show. Okay. You have no fun while I go have all the fun. No, everybody take the week off and enjoy the July 4th holiday. But again, we've got 2 more episodes of Flip the Script to do before we get to that point. Joining me on Tuesday's pod is the one and only, the beautiful Dalton Del Don, as we attempt to find out who's going to be this year's Jamal Williams, a dark horse candidate to be the top, I'll say, touchdown vulture of 2023, or just like maybe the even more surprising top running back performance, more so even than the Josh Jacobs one. I don't know. The parameters are getting weird here. It doesn't matter. Until then, we're out.